You're listening to episode 84 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Chang.
Am I doing this right? Hi, I'm your host, Yin Chang, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence.
Hey, what's up, Storyteller Tribe? First off, excuse my voice if I sound a bit congested. It's allergy season right now, as most of us know. I had some crazy allergies the other day, and now it's gotten into this full-blown sneezing kind of situation. I was told by several of my friends and family members to try Neti Pot, and I tried this other brand called Nasopure last night, and oh my god, I was completely freaking out last night trying to use this nasal cleaning system for the first time. I thought I was drowning, first of all. Also, you guys should know that I don't swim, as in I don't know how to swim. I've had someone pull me under the water completely as a joke in a swimming pool when I was younger, and I nearly drowned from that. So yesterday's Nasopure experience was really, let's just say, an interesting one, but I do feel a lot better today. I would say by next week's episode, my voice should totally be back to normal. But for today, let's jump right into the introductions. I've noticed a jump in listener downloads, and I wanted to take a moment to thank you all for being so incredibly supportive of our show. I appreciate each and every one of you for joining us every week. And if you just found our show, thank you for making your way through our archive of episodes. I know a lot of you have mentioned that you've been going through the archives and you've been loving it, and that makes me so happy. I wish there was a way to track down exactly what led to the spike in listener downloads, but in the meantime, if you recommended our podcast to your friends, thank you so much for helping us spread the word. And I also wanted to thank each and every one of you who've subscribed to our show on iTunes and left a review and a rating for our show. A huge shout out and thank you to our listener who recently left the following review under the username Screamers Are People Too. I'm so glad I found this gem. I've been listening to it every day in the car when I drive to work and pick up my sister from school, and it's lit a fire under my butt that helped me finally finish the third draft of my book. Yin's interview style is so engaging, and she always asks the questions that I want to ask authors. She gets into things like craft, revision, and inspiration, but also the process of publishing and what life as an author is really like. Seriously, every time I go for a drive now, I get out of the car feeling like I've learned something that will make me a better writer. Thank you so much for everything you do, Yin. How awesome was that? Thank you so much for leaving that incredibly touching review, and I'm blown away by your kind words. Thank you so much for taking the time to write that. I'm seriously so grateful to have this community. You have no idea. Now on to the next part of our show. Have you joined our private Facebook group yet? It's the perfect place for you to hang out if you're looking for a loving community to hang out with fellow storytellers and to check in with each other about your work in progress. We also post threads where you can submit your listener questions for upcoming interviews with really cool guests. I know there's a lot of you craft-focused writers out there listening, so that's you. There's amazing questions and resources passed around in our group, and there's even more support and encouragement going on in there. By the way, we just recently started recording live Facebook videos that's exclusive only for our members in our private Facebook group. We're talking about book hauls and unboxing videos, and sometimes I'll even record live videos where I'll chat with members in our group while I prepare dinner. So be sure to come over and hang out with us at facebook.com/groups/88cupsoftea. You'll feel right at home, and I'm so excited to hang out with you in there. That's facebook.com/groups/88cupsoftea. Now on to our show. Anne Bracharez is the number one New York Times bestselling author of the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants series, which has sold over 8.7 million copies. Booklist hailed Anne's newest book, The Whole Thing Together, as quintessential Bracharez. It's a story that explores fractured families, first love, and loss. In Anne's episode, we jump right into the inspiration behind the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants and how she made the transition from the original Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants to Sisterhood Everlasting. Anne also shares the inspiration behind her newest book, The Whole Thing Together, and we discuss how she explores the emotional complexities of her characters. We discover how reading became a refuge for Anne throughout her childhood and how she now finds time to write with a busy family schedule. We get into the fundamentals of writing challenging and personal scenes in your stories and why it's so important to surround yourself with trustworthy accountability partners. Anne also shares tips about joining a book club and how to approach it in a way that specifically helps to improve your craft at writing. For listeners working on query letters, Anne shares how being personal and specific in your query letter can attract literary agents. Now let's jump right in.
We know that you have a new book coming out, The Whole Thing Together, which I'm so excited to talk about and for listeners to learn more about your story, about the inspiration behind it, and also maybe a little bit about the writing process. Before we get into that, I'd love to kick it off and ask you, how did you first fall in love with writing and why do you feel the need to write?
I fell in love with writing, I guess, as a reader. I was a reader certainly before I was a writer, and I just loved getting involved in stories, and for me, it was just a huge part of childhood and adolescence, and then throughout my life, but I needed it most desperately as kind of a refuge, you know, younger, tender parts of life, because I didn't really study writing in school or in college, but afterward, I got a job doing editorial work, and I was doing editorial work of all kinds, and mostly on young adult and some middle grade books. I loved it, and the deeper I got into it, the more I loved it, and the more I learned about the process and the craft of writing, and the more I thought, oh, if I were to write a book, I would want to do it this way, or I would want to do it that way, or how would I approach a character? How would I approach setting and plot and all kinds of things? It took me 12 years to get up my courage, honestly, doing editorial work. And finally, I had a lot of support from some editors and friends and writers, and I just finally thought, okay, got to try to write my own story. And then I wrote The Sister to the Traveling Pants, and that was the beginning.
That is an amazing way to get in. And you know what? Do you mind if I rewind a little bit? I know you mentioned that it's reading was your refuge when you were younger. I read a lot because I didn't have many friends, and I was a little bit bullied when I was younger as well. So for me, reading saved me. So when I hear the word refuge, I absolutely resonate it, but in my own truth, in my own way, which is it saved me literally, and it gave me friends, and it gave me a home, it gave me solace, and it made me feel, hey, I'm cool.
I have friends. They're all here between the covers of this book.
Yes, exactly. They're all here.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. There's so many of us who go to that. I've talked to many friends when they were growing up, their families is a bit rough, you know, whether it's divorces, whether it's siblings fighting, and it gets really bad. And a lot of people who don't read have no idea how life-changing it is and what an impact it can make on a young person's life. Was there a specific reason why you chose the word refuge? That really connected with me. It really hit me in my gut when you used that word. But I'm wondering where that came from for your reason to use that word.
Somewhat the way that you've described. I had a very chaotic household. My parents split up when I was little. I had three brothers. Mm. The youngest was only one when my parents split. Looking back, and even at that time, I knew that we had the great fortune of really loving parents, but there was a lot of remarriage and step-siblings. It was just so complicated and so uncertain a lot of the time, the joint custody between parents and between households. And I felt like this one sort of quirk of my reading, and I know that I share this with a lot of people, particularly young people, I love to read the same books again and again. And partly I think it was because my life felt so chaotic and uncertain that I felt like I could go back into a world and I knew how it would go. And I knew that I loved it and I felt a sense of belonging in it. I remember I used to get teased, and even my mom would say, I can't believe you're reading that book again. It wasn't that I only ever read the same books over and over again, but that's part of what the refuge was for me, is being in a world where I felt like I had some sense of knowing what was going to happen.
Oh my gosh, that gave me chills. And for you, when you say that you read books over and over again, I love that. And I absolutely understand how that brings you that groundedness to center you back in. What were those books, your top favorite one or top three books that you read over and over again that changed your life, maybe even changed your mind about fiction?
From when I was pretty young, I loved Louise Fitzhugh. She wrote Harriet the Spy and Nobody's Family is going to Change. And also Judy Blume, like millions of others. Of course, Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret, but all of her younger novels. But also there was a book about divorce, and now the name is escaping me. I'll try and think of it. But Deanie was another one that I loved. I loved these old-fashioned books by Frances Hodgson Burnett, The Secret Garden and A Little Princess. I must have read those 500 times. And they're just beautiful stories, and you just feel so safe in them because you know how it's going to go. Those are some of the ones that I loved and went back and back into.
Do you have any books right now that's your centerpiece?
I tend to reread The Catcher in the Rye every 5 years or so and sort of mark the progress of my life through my response to it in some way. I love to go back to Jane Austen. I can never get enough of her novels, and I just read them and read them. For more contemporary novels, I'm having a total adoration of Hilary Mantel. Her most famous novel is Wolf Hall. I'm loving historical fiction right now. So I've read Wolf Hall a few times, and every time I think I'm going to understand the very peculiar magic of this book, and I never do, although sometimes I feel like I get a little closer. But she has this incredible narrative style, and the way she handles point of view is so incredibly agile and unusual. I'm a big fan of hers, and particularly recently have been appreciating her books.
I love that you said you like to go back and read books like Catcher in the Rye to mark your progress in life and just to see how much you've changed and how much you've grown. And that gave me a totally completely new way of looking at books and why we return to them over and over again. When I asked you about why you use the word specifically refuge to talk about books growing up and you sharing a bit about your family growing up. And thank you for that, first of all. I appreciate that. I'd love to know, because almost parallel with your new book coming out, and by the time we do air this, the whole thing together would have been released 2 days prior to when we're going to be dropping your episode. So I would love if you can share a snapshot of the whole thing together for listeners to have an idea what to expect, or just for you to also share what is it that you want them to really take from it.
You are right that my own backstory does bear similarities to this new book, The Whole Thing Together. It's not a memoir by any stretch, and it's a contemporary novel, whereas my childhood and adolescence took place quite a while ago. It's about a family. I wanted to write a story about a family. And so that's where I started. And it turns out it is an unconventional family. And at the center of it is a very bitter divorce. And again, I do draw from my own family history a little bit. These parents married, had 3 daughters, split up when the girls were very small, very bitter, a lot of secrets buried, a lot of unhappiness. And each of the parents remarried, and within a short time, each of them had another child. And the thing that keeps the parents in the same orbit, not that they want to be, is that neither side of the family has been able to give up this magical country house. It's at the beach in the Hamptons, and it's been in their family for generations. And it's just this beautiful place that everybody's very attached to. So between the 3 girls in the middle and then a sibling on either side, a boy and a girl, they've all grown up going to this place on the weekends during the year and the weeks during the summer. So the parents basically have to share the house, and they never see each other. They never talk to each other. They continue this seething distrust, unhappiness toward each other. So there's never overlap, and yet they share the house week to week throughout the year. The father on his side and his new wife had a girl. She's almost 17 years old. The mother and her new husband had a son. He's a very similar age, Ray. So the two of them have grown up going to the same house. They shared a nursery. There was a room with a crib in it, and they were never there at the same time. They grew up in the same nursery, which then turned into a bedroom. They grew up reading the same books and playing with the same toys and sharing this imagined life, though having never met each other again, because the families never, ever overlap. But they do share these 3 sisters whom they both adore, and they share stuff and they share memories, although not directly of each other. They kind of share this phantom life. And the book really depicts this summer when the oldest sister, Emma, is on the verge of getting married. And they decide to have an engagement party, which is going to bring the whole family together for the first time since the divorce. And it's going to be the first summer that Sasha, the younger sister on the father's side of the family, and Ray, the brother on the mother's side of the family, are going to meet. That's the premise of the book, and that's how it all begins.
Now, looking back on your whole process of writing the story, and it is very complex in that way, but it's cleverly done. And it's something that I've never read before, and I thought was fantastic that you have a story like this out there that is so unique in its own way. So with the different layers, for me, coming from it as a writer, I'm like, whoa, I would probably need a map or a family tree up on my wall in my writing office the entire time trying to write this. But that's just me. But for you, what was your most difficult challenge about writing the whole thing together? Was it that process of keeping up with who is who and how the layers work? Or was it more so exploring the emotional complexities between the characters and how they react and interact with each other.
I love the interactions and the emotional complexity and trying to find my way into that. That's a challenge, but it's almost always my most pleasurable challenge, particularly if I feel like I'm getting somewhere with it. The complexity of the family situation, I actually do have a little family tree at the beginning of the book. Once I got it square, I didn't struggle with it too much, but I didn't want readers to get hung up on it. I don't want them to feel confused in any way that pulls them out of the story. I tried to write it in such a way that it's all very clear and straightforward, but also that there's like this little family map right in the front so that if you need to go back to it. Once I figured out how everybody was connected to everybody else, that part didn't bog me down too much. The thing that was fun and also challenging about the writing of this book is that not so much that the family structure is complicated, it's that I wanted to consider every member of this family. And again, it's kind of a two-part family because of the remarried mother and the remarried father. And so there's an additional spouse on either side. And I wanted to know all of them. I wanted to know how every one of them felt. And I wanted to create two ecosystems that shared in this one house. And that sometimes was challenging because there are a lot of characters and I wanted to do each of them justice and each of the relationships between them. So it had sort of an exponential feel.
And how about zooming in on the more smaller scenes? Was there one specific scene that you remember being a challenge for you in a way that was an emotional roadblock or even brought you writer's block? I know you mentioned this is not fully autobiographical, but is there anything that was a specific moment or scene that was challenging in terms of emotionally writing it?
There's a really sad scene. I don't want to give it away. As is the case with other books for me, when there's something upsetting that happens, sometimes I'll kind of write around it, a hole in the middle of the sidewalk, and I'll kind of walk around it for a while. I know as much as I can possibly know about what happens and who the people are and how they're going to feel about it. Sometimes I'll save a scene like that because it feels so fraught to me. In this book, the confrontation between the parents when they finally are in the same place, to say that it doesn't all go smoothly is an understatement. And the actual confrontation and the words between them is really hard to do. I don't know why exactly, but it was hard. It was the scene I probably went over the most times.
How were you able to get through it finally? Do you read through it yourself most of the time, or is there a trustworthy critique partner that you can rely on and trust to be like, hey, can you have a look at this? I've worked through it several times. I'm having a bit of a challenge with this. How does that work for you in your writing realm?
I have trouble showing people early stages and drafts of books. I don't know why. I think the process feels a little private and I feel, oh my God, I'm kind of flailing and I don't know what I'm doing. And I don't want anyone to see the messy, messy underside of this, which is silly of me because outside readers, particularly people you know and trust and love, it can really help. In this case, I was alone with it for a while and did a bunch of versions that way. And then my dad is a great reader, and I really appreciate this. He will just bother me about it until I give him it to look at. Because again, I'm always hesitant to do it and to show it to anybody. But he'll say, come on, show me. He'll pester me about it in a way that I'm so grateful for, because if he didn't do that, I think I probably wouldn't. He read a draft of this, and I know it must have been a weird read for him in some ways, because clearly some of these feelings are drawn from a life that he's played a big role in. He was great about it. He was really, really helpful, and he was really helpful about that scene. And then my editor had helpful advice. My agent was great. It's a hard part of the book, and I got a lot of helpful reads and good advice about it.
You sound like you have a really awesome team around you. That's a dream come true. But also I do understand about, especially the beginning drafts, not really feeling comfortable showing other people. I think that's the way I work too. I'm very private in that way. And then when I have that trustworthy friend, they're almost like your dad, where they're like, show me. For me, I'm just, you know what? Here, I'm not fully done, but thank you. I'm going to see you as my accountability partner. I'm not going to see you as someone that's a critique partner just yet at this phase. Have you ever gone into a writing workshop or writing retreat that has helped you or inspired you that you can share with us?
I have a small group. There are four of us. It's more of a reading group than a writing group, but the four of us are writers and we meet every month and we spent a whole year reading the great masterpiece of In Search of Lost Time. I think that was about 14 months and we met every month and would read some chunk of the huge novel. I think we're in our 12th or 13th year. So we talk a lot about writing, but we don't talk so much about our own writing. I mean, we do, but that is usually not the center of our conversation. But we all read as writers do. And so we've had these 12, 13 years of meeting and talking about books and about writing. And that's been an incredible asset for me, both personally and professionally, I think. And I've learned so much from them. So that's the closest thing I have to a writer's group, I'd say.
It's like a very productive book club, but you analyze more so than just talking about what you loved about it.
We were thinking about it the other night when we met. We've read at least 100 books together. And a lot of them, we take on books that are hard and things that we wouldn't necessarily do on our own, because it's another case of accountability here. Mm-hmm. There's only four of us. We only meet when it's all four of us together. We all have read the book. There's no back row, as one of my friends likes to say about it. We're all actively discussing it. And again, we do talk about our own writing too. There's a lot of interesting exchange about the art and craft of writing.
So how about these books that you and your friends are reading? You mentioned that they are difficult books and bigger, heavier books to take in and analyze and break down. How do you and your friends choose which book to talk about or which books to know to read that would bring you a lot of knowledge after you end up analyzing it? How do you choose that, especially for our community who are listening in? If they're unable to, let's say, meet up with friends to have this analyzing book club, how could they go about searching for those books for themselves as well? What do you and your friends look into? I'm not sure, certain lists, or is it word of mouth that you hear of recommendation from within the publishing industry? Hey, right. This book is coming out. It's amazing. Trust me, you're going to want to read it. How does that work for you?
We tend to read books that were published fairly long ago, have been in print for a long time, so they've stood the test of time. This isn't always true, but it's true for the most part, starting with Proust, for instance. This is a difficult and beloved work of fiction, so we knew going into it that there was going to be a lot to work on, a lot to read, a lot to discuss. And then we'll spend a year reading Russian novels, say, reading Dostoevsky and Tolstoy, those great famous works, and also maybe shorter work by Turgenev. We had a period of reading stories, so we were reading Chekhov and Carver and some other great, Alice Munro, some other great short story writers. We did a year of poetry. We didn't go too far with a lot of Emily Dickinson, a lot of Walt Whitman, and a few other poets. We had 2 years, great American writers, Mark Twain, we read a bunch of his books. I guess Faulkner, we spent probably half a year reading Faulkner, and those books are famously difficult, and I don't know if I would have been able to really read them well at all on my own. So that's an example of how we go about it. For the last 6 months, we've been reading Philip Roth, partly because he's an esteemed American writer who I think just retired not too long ago. But sometimes we try and fill gaps in our education. None of us had really read Philip Roth. We were all interested, so we decided to take it on together. Sometimes it'll just be great writers who we just feel like we haven't really given them their due. So we'll take that on almost as a project for 6 months or a year, try and read 10 novels of Philip Roth. So we'll take on big projects like that.
That's amazing. And I really am totally digging this range from all the different genres and between short stories to full-on novels to poetry. I think that's brilliant. I was speaking with another writer and she was talking about if you want to strengthen your writing, you cannot just stick to what you know. You can't just stick to your own genre. You need to study every single different genre to exercise all different sides of your writing. And you need to learn from the greats as well. And she also was mentioning poetry and short stories, fiction, even nonfiction. I love that. I think that's phenomenal and fantastic that you and your friends have committed to this and read so many works. I think that's a fantastic way to break it down. It's a lot less scary and a lot more bite-sizable. And I think that's a thing where a lot of writers, artists overall, because we do fall in the artist category, we get overwhelmed when we feel there's too much to handle and there's too much on our plate. So having a group like this, a trustworthy group of close friends, or at least people that you have something in common with, which is reading, come together and break it down together is so much more fun. I mean, I would soak that up way more. I could learn so much faster doing it that way instead of by myself.
I love all kinds of book groups in any form because I pretty much love books in any form and I love talking about them with people, particularly people I like. But I find that The bigger, looser format can be really, really fun. But one of the things about just a small group of four is that there is that accountability and everybody's involved. And I think sometimes when the groups get big, it can just be kind of a celebration of everybody getting together, which is a worthy thing. But I think sometimes the real intense focus on the books and on writing generally can get a little bit lost.
Yes, exactly. I could just imagine the listeners nodding along and having light bulbs going off left and right. So thank you for sharing this. It's a huge nugget of wisdom and a huge writer's tip.
Oh, I hope so. I hope it's helpful.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Also, when you mentioned a group of four, it just hit me. There's four main girls in the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. So I'm like, wait a minute. This is a little pattern here because it just seems four is a good number with friends and it's enough to have a party and have a good time, but also not overly chaotic where everyone's getting lost over each other. I would love to bring this over to the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. I know that you mentioned that you were doing editorial work for about 12 years before you got the courage to write for yourself, thanks to also a lot of encouragement around you, which also shows how important it is to have a very supportive community around you who believe in you. From that time, do you remember, I know this is several books back, but do you remember the first time you got hit with this inspiration for the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants and why specifically that story?
It came about kind of like that. It was, I had worked a lot with young adult books, and partly going back to the early part of our conversation, it was that feeling of that being such a powerful time of reading and the idea that you can learn so much and get so much from books, I feel, for your whole life, but that's a particularly important time. I had the idea of wanting to write for that general age group and about that general age group, and again, provide that experience that I had benefited from so powerfully. I had wanted to write a book about girls and about their lives and about friendship and about their families. I had had the thought of what's the idea that pulls it together. I was working at a company where we were brainstorming a lot of ideas and putting things together. And I worked with another co-editor there who was talking about having shared a pair of jeans with friends. And that felt like, oh, that's it. That's perfect. I've always had this really superstitious relationship to clothing. And I just felt that would be a perfect way to tie these disparate lives together. And I love the idea of having something so concrete, so specific, you know, something you can actually wear and touch to pull the friends together. So that was sort of the beginning of it.
Do you remember how long that writing process was for you from idea and inspiration to, let's just say, finished manuscript to a point where you were happy with the manuscript?
I would say, I mean, we sort of developed the idea, you know, kind of a framework for it in my old office. And then after that, I took a leave of absence from my job. And I think I had a manuscript ready to show an editor within 7 months of that, 6 months maybe.
That's very quick. My jaws dropped. I'm like, I would love to have at least half of my manuscript finished within 7 months. Well, praises to you. I am here going, yes, queen, get it. That is very impressive.
Oh, well, wow. Thank you. You know, I was rushing and I was pregnant at the time with my third child and I had only a limited leave of absence and I didn't want to lose my health insurance and everything. So I definitely had some external pressures going at that point. And it wasn't a hugely long book. I think the published length is something around 300 pages or so. No, it wasn't this massive tome or anything. It was a full immersion for those months.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Can you please, just to inspire our community, because I know a lot of the listeners, many of them are moms that are balancing a full day job, coming home and trying to make time for family, and also whatever time they have left after putting the kids to bed, after taking care of everything, they're also trying to make time for their writing as well. For me, I don't have children just yet, but I can't even imagine. I know everyone's saying, listen, there's no excuse. If you love to do it, if that's your dream, you got to make the time. Absolutely agree with that. But at the same time, to be fair, it is a difficult thing to do to balance all of that. And you mentioned you are on a timeline and your baby's about to come out. Any advice for our listeners on time and just getting it done the way you did? How often were you writing each day, if you were writing every day, or was it, I'm going to commit to weekends and I'm going to throw down 5,000 words or something crazy? Is there any advice from that experience that you can please pass on to our awesome parents in the community?
It's harder to find the time, no question, when you're a parent. But at the same time, one thing I would like to say is, please don't be discouraged. I've only ever been a writer as a parent. When I wrote the first sisterhood book, I had two little boys and was pregnant with my daughter. I was able to take a leave of absence from my job, so I was able to work during the day. So my three-year-old was in nursery school that year, or maybe he was in kindergarten. Actually, I'm getting the time wrong. Maybe he was five. And then my next one was at home, but I had a sitter who would come for part of the day. And then I would get everybody to bed and I would work a lot at night. That was the time when the house was finally quiet. Everybody was asleep. I felt like the world could just kind of expand. I could just go into my own imaginary world because nobody needed me for a few hours. I was never a writer without being a mom. So I didn't have to weather the transition of having much more time to myself to not having very much time. But I feel being a parent, you know how valuable your time is when you have a little bit of it. I continue to really appreciate that. So I would try and budget time to work during the day. I would try and after dinner, after the kids were in bed, sit at my desk and give myself time then too. And that's when I would really get into my best, most meditative writing state. Some people are great in the morning, and I've never been much of a morning person. I've been much more of a night writer. That's been changing a little bit, but I would say it can be done. Being a mom and being a writer, I feel like those two jobs work together really, really well. A thing that's hardest is to just try and carve out your time and to defend it and to say it's important and my books are important and my life as a writer is important. And that's been a constant challenge for me.
Wow, that was really inspiring. And also to know that you published so many books and also finding still it being a challenge is very inspiring for the community. I know a lot of our listeners are going to take that to heart and it's going to inspire them a lot with their own scheduling as well.
Oh, I hope it's helpful. Thanks.
It is. Let me hop on over to the listener questions. And Okay. We have two for you today. First one is going to be from Kristen Britt. She said, I'd love to hear about the transition from the original Sisterhood books to Sisterhood Everlasting, which, by the way, Kristen loved. So if you could share a little bit about that, that would be so amazing.
I'm so glad she loved it. I wrote those initial four books over the course of maybe 8 or 9 years, I guess. I'm so bad at keeping track of the time of all this. But anyway, after that, I kind of had a sense that I wasn't really done writing about them. I mean, certainly they remain alive for me. Like, I imagined it as a four-book story, and I took them to a place in the fourth book where I felt like I had finished telling that story. But then I thought, okay, one of my consolations for leaving them is the thought that I would be able to come back. So I almost forced myself to take a break, to do some other things, to write some other books, which I did and enjoyed, and did sort of stretch myself a little bit and see how it felt to write new and different characters. After some years had passed, I thought, okay, I'm going to go back again, and I'm going to hopefully let the years that separated the fourth book from this new project to hopefully just enrich my sense of who these girls now, women, are and what they've been through and what I've been through. And it was a funny kind of bookend because I had been pregnant when I wrote the first book. And then much later, I was pregnant again with my fourth child, who's 10 years younger than my third child. So I was pregnant again, writing that Sisterhood Everlasting. Again, it was a sort of a strange symmetry. It was fascinating going back to them. Again, I was talking about marking my reading life through going back to the same Holden Caulfield again and again. Well, this was deeper and stranger in a way because I was going back to characters that I had created, but having spent a lot of my life writing them and then taken a long break and having a lot of life and a lot of experience pass in between, coming back to them, there was a sense of, who are you now? What have we done? What have we been through? What mattered? What didn't? How did memory shape us and how distorted is our memory? How does all this that happened that I recorded in those original four books, how does that feel to us now? There were a lot of interesting questions. I wouldn't say it was a hard transition. It was a nostalgic one. And it also required a lot of thought, a lot of pre-writing.
I'm sure Kristen is super happy with that answer. Thank you so much, Anne. And I'm going to jump over to Alyssa Coleman's question. She said that you deservedly had so much success with Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. And she remembers reading the book and then watching the movie with her mom and her aunt on a family vacation, and they all enjoyed it so much. And Alyssa would love to hear how you were able to write your next book under that kind of pressure.
First of all, I'm glad that you enjoyed it, and I'm glad you were able to share the movie widely with all your women. I love those stories. It is hard. It's such a lucky problem, right, to be writing a book knowing that you actually have readers. That's a really lucky situation, but it can be hard. There's pressure. There's a sense of wanting to both satisfy and please people who've read your book and have appreciated your writing in some way. Self-consciousness and pressure aren't great for writing, where you really have to just liberate yourself to try things and take risks and write really badly sometimes if necessary. Sometimes in order to get going, I just need to just write through it. I don't end up using it a lot of the time, but just write to give myself permission to write really terribly, hopefully to get past that and to be able to write well again. So particularly after the first Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants book was published and it was successful and the publisher was really eager for me to finish the next one, I was so confused and so tangled up about how to write and how to communicate and what to do. And so that was one of the hardest books I wrote. And then following up after I'd finished those four was again a feeling of uncertainty and self-consciousness, which is just anathema to writing. So each time there was a lot of difficulty getting started again. And once I did, once I was really writing and really had my mind on in the minds of the characters, the self-consciousness and the pressure, it really falls away, thankfully. And so it did.
Love that. I think Alyssa's going to really be happy with that answer. Let's wrap it up with the rapid fire questions.
Okay.
On writing tips, tips on query letters, anything that pops in your head, throw it out there.
To be personal and to be specific. I feel like real specificity, detailed presentation of your idea, who you are, what you want. I think that always bites through and is the best way to present yourself and to present your ideas. That's a vague answer to suggest specificity, but my daughter was writing an essay for something recently for an application. I felt I knew her in the tiny details and in her effort to explain a really specific thing, a specific instance in her life, so much more than when she just expressed herself in descriptive language.
That's very helpful. And you've been amazing.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And that wraps up our episode with the absolutely lovely Anne Brashares. Anne, I so enjoyed having you on the show, and I loved chatting with you. Storytellers, I am so grateful for your support, and thank you, as always, for being a part of our community. Please say hi to Anne on Twitter, at Anne Brashares. Anne recommended a lot of amazing resources for you to check out, and we have them all linked up in her show notes page over at 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/Anne Brashares. If you'd love to support our show by rocking your 88 Cups of Tea swag, head over to 88cupsoftea.com/mug to grab your limited edition 88 Cups of Tea mug signed by yours truly. Thank you so much in advance for showing your love and supporting our show. That's 88cupsoftea.com/mug. And don't forget to join our Facebook group if you're looking for an intimate community for storytellers where you can check in about your writing and hang out with other storytellers. You can also submit questions for future guests on our show, and we recently added live unboxing and book haul videos, so join me over in our private Facebook group at facebook.com/group/88cupsoftea. There's tons of love, support, and encouragement going on in this special community of ours. I can't wait to meet you in there. Join us at facebook.com/group/88cupsoftea. Have an amazing rest of your week, and I'll catch you in the next episode.
Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye.